Hello, this is Bobby Dooley, and you're listening to the Story Worthy Podcast with your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Thinney. And I'm just, you know what? There's a little bit of streaking going on, so I've got to change.
Welcome to the Story Worthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finn.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and this is a Best of Storyworthy.
Woohoo! Best of Storyworthy. And tonight's topic is the best of women.
Yeah, women.
Women. And it's interesting because we kind of have two different types of stories.
Right. We got women from the inside. That's Annabel Gurwitch.
Right.
And women from the outside. That's
Phil
Hendry.
In other words, like a man's point of view.
Yes, a man's point of view about, yes, his interaction with women and men in general.
Right, and Phil Hendry's story, that's the second story tonight, his is primarily about his mother.
Well, all stories that men tell about women are really about their mother, whether they mention their mother or not.
Is that true?
That's completely true.
No, I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely, because men, and, you know, women do the same thing. Women, you know, they always say, like, women will end up marrying a man like their father, and men will end up marrying a woman like their mother. Now, if your mother is a wonderful person, then that's going to be a recipe for happiness. If your mother is not a wonderful person, then that's not going to work so well,
and vice
versa. Well,
that's very interesting, because, you know, I've been a wife twice. And actually, it's true. Both of my ex-husbands, I'm sort of both like their mothers, both of them.
Well, yeah, and that's completely...
I mean, not in all aspects. I mean, I'm not like a born-again Christian like one, and I'm not, you know, whatever.
No, but it's not a matter of, it's a matter of general personality. It's like, you know, my fiance Sherry is not like my mother, and this is the happiest relationship I've ever been in. I've been in relationships before with women who, like, just every once in a while, I'm like, God damn it, which is exactly... what my mother used to make me do.
That's really interesting, Hannes. I didn't know you, you know, that's a good observation on your point, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not like, I mean, I wish I could take credit for it, but I think Freud was
the first one.
You can
take credit, go ahead.
No, I think, well, actually, people have known that for a long time, but...
Okay, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
All right, so that's our first story then is by Annabel Gurwitch.
Right, and to me, see, her story, which is about makeup primarily and women's self-image, is why I say women on the inside, because it's like there's a whole bunch of stuff going on inside women's heads that guys have no idea. They have this general idea, like your woman, you know, your wife who you've known for 20 years is going to put on a pair of pants and she's going to say, does me make me look fat? Now, even if she works out every day and she's the hottest woman on earth, and you say, what are you talking about? You have the ass of a 12-year-old boy. Okay, that's bad. But, you know, it's like... she's still not going to believe you, no matter how hot she is.
Right.
And if she is, in fact, fat, you could never go, no, it's not the pants. Why don't you go to the gym? You can't
do it. It's a lose-lose situation.
Yes.
Well, also, women tend to focus on small things like, you know, their eyebrows or, you know, how many necklaces they have on or shoes.
Yeah, there was the many great things I ever saw in Seinfeld was a discussion. There's Elaine with a woman who's thinking of going out with George, and she's trying to sell George. You know, it's like, oh, well, he's this and this and this. And then George is asking Jerry about this woman, and Elaine had told him, well, she has great eyebrows. Women want her eyebrows. And so he tells George that, and he goes, what do I care about eyebrows?
Right.
It's like women think about things that men never think about.
I understand.
Women find the way, oh, I'm not attractive enough. You know, somewhere,
well,
Cindy Crawford probably spent her whole life staring in the mirror going, oh, my God, look at this mole. Completely ignoring her giant eyes and hair and boobs and just general gorgeousness. She was like, oh, my God, I have a mole on my face.
I don't think she has really big boobs.
This is not the point. She's got a mole the size of New Jersey, and yet still hot.
Now, Annabel Gurwitch is talking about, she talks about going into a department store and all the choices there are for makeup. And, you know, that all comes down to what we're seeing on TV and what the image of beauty is. I mean, they're telling us, and we're seeing these pictures, that if you wear this lipstick or you use this concealer or you dye your hair this color or you wear these shoes, that somehow you will have more confidence. confidence. You will have more friends. You will have a fuller life.
Yes.
And so we buy into this, that that is the model of beauty. Therefore, we are aiming to toward that.
Right. But again, we think we're so sophisticated, but this is just inbred in human nature. Women in the bush somewhere and hundreds of years ago, and still it's like they would, I'll put a plate in my lip.
Right.
Or I'll have my neck expanded by putting rings, or I'll do – it's like women are genetically predisposed to change their appearance.
Well, men do it too.
No, men do do it too. And I think that actually in olden day, in nature, like in a tribe, men would do it much more. And we have this weird homophobic thing in Western society where it's like men can't – if a man tries to make himself look good, then he's gay.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Well, it's changing a little bit now, but that's been for years and years. No, when I was in high school, if a guy was like, you know what, I'm going to put product in my hair, nobody would have called it that then. You know, I'm going to actually do something specifically for my appearance. It's like, what a fag.
Well, yeah, but that was in the 1970s.
That's not that long ago, I'd like to think.
Yeah, but it was in Wisconsin as well. I mean, you grew up in the middle of, middle suburbia America, right?
America. Fuck yeah. I just watched that movie the other day.
ICA. Oh, you did?
The America, Team America, World Police.
World Police, right. That was a great film.
It's a great film. I actually know a woman at Universal who was one of the puppeteers.
All right, but before we get to Annabelle Gurwitch's story, I did want to mention, you guys, that if you'd like to help out Storyworthy, we sure would appreciate it. You know, we've been coming at you guys for over 3 years now, and it costs you guys nothing. So if you'd like to help us out, do a couple of things. First of all, when you shop on Amazon, head on over to storyworthypodcast.com first.
Right, you're going to buy presents for people. You're going to buy things for your home. You know what? You need toilet paper? Go to Amazon, buy it from them, and buy it through us. Every time you wipe your ass, think of Storyworthy. That's what I say.
Anyway, that's a nice thing to do to help us out. Also, we do have a donate button on our website, storyworthypodcast.com, and you can do a monthly donation as little as $5.
Yeah, really. What is that going to hurt you, people? I'm serious, people. What? $5 a month.
It really
just
helps us out.
For a year. It'll help us.
All right, you guys. Annabelle Gurwitch tells the first story. Now, her story is titled The Lipstick Effect. It's excerpted from Annabelle Gurwitch's forthcoming memoir, I See You Made an Effort, Compliments, Indignities, and Survival Stories from the Edge of 50, which comes out in March of 2014. Annabelle's other book, You Say Tomato, I Say Shut Up, a self-hurt marital memoir co-written with her husband, Jeff Kahn, is actually now a theatrical play, Hannes, and it's in its third national tour. So you could go down the street there in Wisconsin
and see people playing
Annabelle Gurwitch and
her husband, Jeff Kahn.
Isn't that great? In the play, You Say Tomato, I Say Shut Up.
I wonder if when Jeff and Annabelle are together in their special way, they imagine the actors who are, each one of them imagines a different actor playing them.
I don't know. I don't know. That could happen.
It sounds hot to me.
Annabelle had another book. It was actually her first book. It was called Fired, which became an acclaimed documentary on Showtime. That was about getting fired from Woody Allen, was what that was about.
Yeah, I know. Woody Allen has myriad faults, obviously, as we all do, but that did upset me because it's like he was being a real dick.
Yeah. All right. Annabelle, she was also the original co-host of Dinner and a Movie on TBS for 6 seasons, and you can find her on Twitter at Annabelle Gurwitch, but Annabelle is spelled A-N-N-A-B-E-L, and then Gurwitch, G-U-R-W-I-T-C-H.
Yeah, so it's not the way her name is spelled. She had to spell it
She didn't mean to spell it this way, but it is what it is. Right. At Annabelle Gurwitch with one L. Folks, wherever you are, please put your hands together for Annabelle Gurwitch.
Thank you. I've gotten dressed up to walk into a store. I've assembled my most fashionable outfit to ensure that I will be treated with deference by people who are being paid to take my money. I'm wearing one of my corporate board meeting ensembles, a pinstriped wool skirt in chocolate paired with a coffee-colored cashmere sweater. I purchased these investment pieces back when brown was going to be the new black and money was lubricated, back before everyone in America was vying for minimum wage jobs just to stay underemployed. Two holes in the sweater are located at the waist, a small conciliatory gesture, perhaps, from the closet moths that are waging a war against my wardrobe. I have cleverly placed a belt over the offending area, and I'm striding past the alluring displays of expensively packaged products, hoping that the crazy glued soles of my decades-old Miu Miu's will hold for the brief amount of time it will take to run this errand. I have an entrance and an exit strategy planned. It will be surgical, just like the U.S. involvement in Afghanistan. I've come for a concealer. I've written down the manufacturer, product name, and number so I don't make a mistake and purchase the incorrect shade. This product not only promises to restore the under-eye area to a refreshing brightness, but just might be the key to my, if not looking younger, then just the best version of myself. I approach the least intimidatingly attractive salesperson on the floor. She has a sweet, open, honest face, and she's either Mexican or Eastern European. I can't place her accent because it's hard to hear her voice over my inner monologue. I've got a list. I repeat like a mantra, stick to the list, stick to the list. But before I can stop myself, I've announced to her that I am turning 50 this year. The admission of my age is an invitation for her to tell me how great I look. This is terrible because I know that she knows that the better she tells me I look, the more she'll be able to sell me. This is a directly proportional equation that has played out with increasing frequency over the last months. Marta, maybe, tells me she's 45. She confides that she's been using an amazing fruit exfoliant that makes her skin glow and that she always gets compliments when she uses it. The one thing I don't need is a scrub, I say firmly, but you do look great. And now we're the best of girlfriends. We compare diets. And although I regularly lie awake wondering whether the hormones that I'm taking are speeding me towards an early demise or just slowly poisoning my inner organs, I'm speaking with authority when I say she needs to take both estrogen and progesterone, as well as massive doses of vitamin D and calcium. But standing at the corner at Barney's, I feel compelled to pass along my limited and flawed understanding of the subject to Marta, and Marta dutifully nods as I fill her in. Then I pull out my list, and I read off the product number I've come to replace. The liquid concealer that I've come for is so expensive. It costs the exact same amount per ounce as Beluga caviar. Clay Depot's Silky Cream Foundation B20 Glow, spelled G-L-O, runs $120 an ounce. For that price, you would think they could afford the W. No, wait, it's so chic, it doesn't need to be spelled correctly. I notice a second number on the label as well, $3,500. Could that be the dollar amount they predict users will spend in a lifetime? Probably. While she reaches to retrieve it, I look down at the lipsticks, and I see that the Sunburst lip gloss really does have a warm glow. The Tropic of Nectar blush is so peachy, and its name might even be a nod to Henry Miller. And the Terracotta lip liner is sort of a perfect shade. And 6,906 miles away, the Greek economy is collapsing. And 5,457 miles away, 20,000 public sector workers are protesting in London. And 16.3 miles across town, my son is ordering a $3 public school lunch with ingredients most of the mothers in my zip code, mothers who made better choices in the first 40 of the 49 years of their lives, would never allow inside the bodies of their precious offspring. But my child will eat because I cannot afford a private school where sushi is being served in individual bento boxes. But the air in Barney's smells like chilled citrus, gardenias, and clean sheets. So if you farted, no one would ever know. because it is practically a wind tunnel wafting freshness your way. And the floor is so clean you could not only eat off it, you could probably perform a liver transplant. So I hear myself saying, I'll take 3 extra items that were not on the list. I shouldn't be doing this because I'm on the declining side of my earning capacity. It's possible that I will earn less money in the remaining part of my life than I have made until this point altogether. I am earning less. I have less time in which to spend it. And yet, I need more money. Much more money. And sure, given all of that, I should not be handing over my credit card. And given that, as I reach for my card, I mentally review the list of things I have never been able to, nor will ever afford, now that I am a slave to my face. I have never owned a second home. I don't really own my first home, mortgaged as it is, to be honest. Never flown in a private plane. Never holidayed in Turks and Caicos. Had to look up the spelling of Turks and Caicos. And the likelihood that I will ever travel to Turks and Caicos is so remote that I'm not even sure where it's located. Though I am aware it's a spectacularly tony destination where a vacationer's effluence gets whisked away swiftly but flows untreated into the surrounding waters where it's caused degradation to the endangered coral reefs. I've never purchased a designer handbag, never hired an interior decorator, or eaten at a Wolfgang Puck restaurant when I was paying. I've also never lived through a genocide, walked across Africa, or licked newspapers for nutritional value like Frank McCourt, although I was once tempted to lick a positive review in the New York Times. I have first world problems. I know this, but they are still my first world problems. And it turns out that growing up in a solidly middle-class family, working at minimum wage jobs, volunteering at soup kitchens and your kid's school does not completely inoculate you from the lure of luxury. And it's not that I want any one of these extravagances or that I think any one of these things will make me happy, but there's something about knowing that I will probably never have them that's not unlike how devastatingly sad I felt when I realized the window for having children had closed forever. But as I hand over my credit card and Marta repeats that she really wants to show me that scrub, I am holding the line at the outermost layer of my epidermis. It's like Vietnam. Must not cross the 17th parallel. No, I'm fine. But do you have any samples of moisturizers? I say, as the realization sinks in that I have spent over $200 in less than 2 minutes. I must not leave Barney's without receiving something free, and moisturizers are the holy grail of all facial products. I have spent so much money, I deserve samples, damn it. But she doesn't want to give me a sample. No, Marta is going to personally make a sample for me. And I watch intently as she scoops a minuscule amount of vanilla pudding-like substance into the tiniest plastic container in the known world. Shuddering as I think about the factory that produces these miniature pods, I say a silent prayer that they're not sorted by tiny hands of child workers. And I promise myself that I will reuse them when traveling. And I try to make my features appear interested when she recites the anti-aging qualities of this particular elixir, though I know perfectly well I have no intention of ever purchasing it. Depositing the tiny treasure into my purse, I move towards the door, but she is following me and subtly blocks my exit, positioning herself by another counter, manned by a slightly more mature version of herself. Marta tells me that her colleague, older Marta, Well, show me that fruit exfoliant now. Cornered. Matronly Marta takes my right hand and begins rubbing a fruit exfoliant on my skin. It's mango or pomegranate or watermelon, and she's massaging and massaging this cucumber or papaya, or was it sweet potato? I have no idea, because the circular motion is starting to make me feel nauseous. And she keeps scrubbing, and for some reason, the skin on my hand looks brighter, shinier. How did she do that? It's only $50, she tells me with an inflection that suggests that she's just told me she's handing me $50. Oh, that's a bargain, I hear myself say in agreement. Only $50. It's made by a doctor in New York, she tells me, in the same voice that my grandmother used to describe men who were good marriage material. A doctor. Marta says, tell her about the deal she can get. They're double teaming me now. It's two against one. If you spend $200, you get this bottle of oxygenated harmonized water for free. My grandmother, Rebecca from Minsk, would have liked the sound of that water. In the summers during the 1940s, our entire clan traveled by Greyhound bus from where they had settled in Mobile, Alabama, a few hours to the north, to take the waters at Healing Springs. The Muskegee people had purportedly visited this site for centuries, where the mineral water was said to cure everything from dyspepsia to eczema. You would not only bathe in the springs, you'd drink it as well. Like most immigrants at the time, my grandmother expected a lot of value from everything you purchased. She was a dedicated user of Nivea cold cream in the blue tin, both as a cleanser and a deep moisturizer. On the sleepovers at her house, my sister Lisa and I could recognize the mentholated smell from her bedroom when she'd slather it on as a mask. We would cover our faces with the heavy pudding, marveling at how, even after you washed it off, your skin would still feel wet, slippery. But will this harmonized water keep my vagina from being so dry? I blurt out. The Martas look at me blankly. I was joking, I say. JK, as the kids say, just joking. But they just stare at me. And I know I will be going home with Dr. Colbert's intensifying facial discs, because they don't know me or my sense of humor, because I said dry vagina, and because she spent so much time on my hand. This time, the financial exchange is silent and swift. In that moment, I recall shopping when I was a kid, my mother holding her breath as each credit card she'd hand over would have to be tried before a sale could be completed. I would look around, hoping no friends from school were there to witness that transaction. Either that, or I would will myself to become invisible. At 49, I've discovered that age gifts you with invisibility in all but monetary transactions. I have it covered, barely. Cash extracted, I leave. Arriving home, I rush upstairs past my teenage son. I'm working on a deadline, I yell down to him, which is sort of true. I immediately strip off my clothing and step into the shower. Pushing aside the upside-down bottles of shampoo, I carefully place this jar labeled Daily Nutrition for the Skin next to the one marked Transdermal Bioenergized Resurfacing Solution, which I purchased only a few weeks earlier. I take out a facial disc and I begin scrubbing my left hand, wondering how many of the 2 million American women born the same year as me are doing something similar at that very moment. After only a few circular motions, it's clear I simply have dirty hands. I am an idiot. Brown was never going to be the new black. I scrub my face hard, remove another disc. It's more scouring than scrubbing at this point, applying so much pressure that terracotta-colored capillaries appear on the thinning skin around my nostrils. Thank God I bought that concealer, I think, as I head down to heat up a frozen pizza for dinner. Marta must be home by now as well. Marta, whose real name I may never know because I, too, have worked service jobs under a slave name, is probably heating up the casserole she made yesterday from scratch. She's boiling corn and steaming greens for her kids. Marta, who is actually 29 in all probability, didn't need my lecture on hormones and vitamin D. She probably read the latest research and smartly decided to skip them all. And I hope she's working on commission because she deserves it.
And we're back. Oh, that was an awesome story. So, yeah, so you probably encountered this kind of makeup overload yourself,
she
right?
Is
where you
go
in for one thing.
She is an excellent storyteller, I will say that.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it. I could smell that perfume that pervades the air and the makeup counter.
And it makes me want to go to Barney's. I've never been there, actually.
Very upscale, that's what
I understand, right. I don't think I'd have the clothes to go into Barney's to buy the clothes.
Yeah, they might not let you in to buy things that you couldn't afford in the first place.
I think all women can really relate to what Annabelle was talking about because there's this thing about the makeup in the department stores. You know what it is, Honest? It's better makeup. That's what it is. There just is better makeup.
Better than makeup you buy where?
At the drugstore? Like the pharmacy, right. Like there's much better makeup than CoverGirl. I mean, there is a degree of good makeup. Yeah. So you go to these counters, but that, you know, it's the teensiest bit of liquid gold, you know, that's in these little tiny jars.
I know. That's the thing. It's always the tiniest container on the face of the earth, as Annabelle said. It's like, where do they even find these?
Right. And then I know in college anyway, we would go down to Kaufman's department store in Pittsburgh and, you know, we would track. There was like a season of giveaways, right? It would be like the first 2 weeks of January would be the Clinique counter. You know, they'd be giving away a little satchel with like six little things inside.
Yeah.
And then the next 2 weeks would be the Estee Lauder counter and then the Clarins counter. And it would go on and proceed through the spring so that you would end up with a ton of makeup.
Yeah.
But most of it you don't really use.
Well, that's the thing is, like, I think that women buy a tremendous amount of things that they never end up using.
Ask me how many products I use.
How many products do you use, Christine?
72. No, that's
Jesus
not true.
Christ.
That's not. And that's not true. But I will say there are specific things you want for different reasons. There.
Well, let me say this. Let me ask this question. How many products do you own that you don't use? That's a better question.
You know, not a lot because I personally have, I live in a small space.
But
and
now,
so I'm
in the
really
past,
good at
like when,
keeping 20,
15
keeping
years
it tight.
Ago, like when you were just.
Well, I do
12.
Love makeup. I mean, I love makeup. I love to buy it. I love to look at it. I have one of those. I have one of those makeup containers, right, that holds makeup. It's like a big silver chest or like a trunk, and you open it from the top. It's almost like a guitar case. It's almost like you're a roadie for a makeup crew, and you open it up, and then there's these tiers that you pull out in a mirror.
I've seen this because our friend Janice Bremick, who is a pro makeup person,
has.
It looks like the back of like you know a rock star's van.
Right.
It's like
it
opens up.
It's
gigantic.
A pro kit. And so I have that, but I don't use that. That's not, I don't use it because I don't have that much makeup anymore.
I think it's kind of like, you know what that is. I mean, it is literally a woman's toolbox, but it's like, there are a lot of guys who own a lot of tools that they never use. They just, it's fun to play with. Like, look at this ratchets that I have. I can do any one of 150 nutheads.
But
you've
really,
never done one.
Right. All you need is like one screwdriver that can flip from a Phillips head to a standard, you know, one claw hammer and maybe
and a pair of pliers.
And a pair of pliers and maybe an awl. I mean, that's all you need.
An awl. I got your awl right here.
All right, you guys, we have another storyteller right now. Phil Hendry.
He's got a hell of a toolbox, I hear.
Phil Hendry. He is a genius of the airwaves. And you know, Hannes, Phil has two podcasts. He has the Phil Hendry Show, and then he has Mm-hmm with Bobby Dooley.
I believe that's pronounced
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Bobby Dooley's actually been on this show. She was on last year.
She was with April her husband 1st. In the background, yes.
Right, she was on April 1st. And you know what that day is, Hannes?
That is April Fool's Day.
And you know how many letters I got talking to me about why I had on a crazy lady?
Plenty.
I got like 8 letters
of people who didn't understand that it, yeah.
Because I didn't think I had to explain it. I didn't go into like, this is Phil Hendry doing Bobby Dooley on the Mm-hmm podcast.
Even if so, she was an entertaining crazy lady, even if you thought she was real. So what are you complaining about? Like, this isn't the news.
People told me that I was very professional and I really held it together.
Wow, that's awesome.
Oh, that's
meanwhile,
funny.
We're begging. We're like, please come in and do Bobby Dooley. He's like, I don't want him.
Anyway, all right. Phil Hendry, you guys, you can hear his podcasts on iTunes or also at philhendryshow.com. And you can follow Phil on Twitter at RealPhilHendry. Ladies and gentlemen, wherever you are, put your hands together for Phil Hendry.
Thank you. Thank you. The story that I was led to starting it out this way by Hans. You mentioned, is Phil going to tell us everything he knows about women? And yes, am I an expert? Yeah, I am an expert. But you also have to be an expert on yourself to be an expert on women. You have to be an expert, and you have to be heterosexual, I guess, because that's where I'm coming from. Although you could be gay and be an expert on women, and that would make you okay. A hairdresser, right? See how I fell into that? But I think that I know the women have been my downfall and my up fly. I was trying to find the opposite of downfall, and that is what it is. When you fall, you either fall or fly. So my up fly, which also references my zipper, has been women. But they've been my downfall. When I was born, I had a mother, and I tried to please my mother like all men do. My mother let me down, as sometimes mothers will, and I continued into the world trying to find my mother again to please her. Only my mother is now old, so I don't want to have sex with her. At one time I did, but I don't anymore. And so I would find women to be my mom, which guys will not deny that this is true, but it is absolutely true. And what did I try to do? I tried to take care of them. I tried to take care of them because that's how you get love from your mother. And in taking care of women, I began to hate myself. Because when you take care of people, when you become a caretaker, you sort of become more of a son, more of almost a eunuch than you do a lover and a man. And so my self-loathing turned into, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to just come at it where I really want to come at it from, which is sex. But still, the boy wanting to please the mother is there. And so you become a performer sexually. And then you get overloaded and you want nothing more to do with women until you find, is this interesting at all? I can't imagine anybody's listening to this shit at all, man. I would turn this off and within 4 hours. No, so anyway, finally I did meet a woman who I could be sexual with, and she was my mother, and I could take care of her. And not only that, she had 4 children, exactly the number of kids that were in my family when my family split up because of the divorce of my parents. And I was living large. And I was also hitting a stride in my career where I was making a lot of money. So every dream I ever had of a family, which was huge Christmases with big, gigantic Christmas trees, great sex with a beautiful wife, kids that I could go out on Saturdays with and go toy shopping. I mean, my greatest joy the first 2 years that we were married was to go online and buy toys at Christmas time. And that was the best Christmas I think I can ever remember, that first Christmas we were together, because I just loaded up the tree and I had all kinds of money. Well, here's the problem with all of this, guys. When you go to repair your birth family by substituting people for mom, for your dad, for your siblings, you are blinded to who those people really are that you're marrying into. So my wife is somebody else. She's not my mother. And the 4 children are somebody else. They're not my kids. So you get into that thing where people will start to hate you because they're saying, you're not treating me the way who I am. You're right. But then you're not treating me the way who I want to be treated, because I've got this whole family thing I'm working out. And of course, they're working their shit out. This was a disastrous marriage for me, and it ended not only with the death of my marriage and with the death of a family, but also the death of my career, because it became such an onerous thing that I literally lost my interest for work, and I lost my ability to show up and actually do the things that that Christine so generously described, you know, which I'm not sure what she said about me, but I'm a mortician, and I do... what did she say? Oh, radio show, yeah. So, no, I know, but that Christine was very generous in describing, but all of that went away. And not only did all of it go away, but because I didn't really see these people as they really were, I wound up really getting, you know, taken to the cleaners. And it's been 6 years that I have been rebuilding not only a career and a life, but also finding out all this shit that I'm telling you about right now. So what's left? What's left is I know the downfall part of women. Now I got to know the part of getting rid of all that shit, letting somebody take care of me for a change as opposed to me taking care of them, and seeing someone for who they really are as opposed to... Now, that may sound like stuff that you would do when you're talking about male friends as well, but this is pretty unique to women, because there's a dynamic involved called sex, which to men is super important, and to women it is too, you know, but for us it's part of our expression, and it's part of the way we express our love to a woman by saying to her, you know, I am the He-Man, and I will help you nest, and why don't we get started on that baby thing sooner rather than later? And that's what we do. And besides, that's how we were trained by women. Because going all the way back to the very beginning of our species, females rewarded the male who was able to feather the nest. That's why we walk on two legs, and I can go into that whole story. There's a reason why we walk on two legs and not four. Our species realized that because we were increasing our intelligence, we could gather things with these two limbs. We didn't need to walk on them. The female reacted to that because that's more shit that he's bringing back to the nest. I want that male. That's all I have to say about that, Ms. Blackburn. I hope that is okay.
Wow.
And we're back. Phil, laying it out about men and women. A lot of confusing stuff.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that he did have that family with four kids, and it was such a, it seemed like such a good thing going on.
It was like, yeah,
it was
a pre-made
over.
Family, which was what he was looking for. But like you said, when you are sort of casting your loved ones as your previous family,
yeah,
do you know what I mean? It's like it's not going to work because you're not seeing them for who they actually are.
Right.
You're not.
It's
speaking
just
to the person who's there. You're speaking to the person you're asking them to fill in for.
It's just strange in life how you think you're on a path and this is the way it's always going to be and this is my future. And then all of a sudden you find yourself single again. I mean, I have found myself like things change all the time.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, yeah, you've changed. We have other friends who are getting divorced. It's like people see, I've always had this very cynical non-permanence idea in my head that nothing lasts forever and you can't count on things, which can be a real negative. But on the other hand, when things actually go wrong, you don't jump up with surprise like, I am shocked to find that my life could change.
Right.
It's like, yeah, people are like, hey, I got a house and I got a spouse and I got kids. And so this is it. This is it. It's like, that's not it. Nothing changes. I have a friend who just moved to Seattle. Just was like, you know what? I'm done with L.A.
Yeah.
It's, you know, all these things are over.
Move.
It's like, I'm going. Yeah. It just, I got to go. I got to change.
Yeah. That's really exciting that she did that, though. That's a bold move to go up and she doesn't know anybody, you know, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah. When I helped her move up there, it was like during that tremendous cold snap. And it's like, you're driving through California. It's like 16 degrees at night. Coldest I've been in 20 years made me realize don't want to move back to a cold climate.
No, neither do I. No, neither do I.
No. Seattle seemed cool, though.
Seattle, yeah, that's a great
Seattle.
I was
about 45 minutes outside of it, and then I had to fly home. But let me tell you this. This has nothing to do with anything. The Seattle airport, greatest airport I've ever been in my life.
SeaTac.
And I go into this thing. It's like a fancy food court. There's a giant wall of windows overlooking the tarmac. I mean, gigantic. I'm like, this is cool. I walk up there. There's a row of rocking chairs.
Oh, wow.
Looking out the window. It's like, you damn hippies.
Oh, that's great. That is so, I love
you sit in your rocking chair and you stare out at the planes and the mountains past them.
And you have your e-cigarette
them.
And it's totally legal.
Your e-cigarette,
legal.
You get your, what is it, Ivar's for fish. Apparently that's the big fish there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I tweeted this out. I got like 5 responses, which is big for me. It's like I actually had a Starbucks card that I have not used in like a year. And I used it at the Seattle airport. To me, that seemed ironic somehow.
I think that is ironic.
But is it, we should need to call Alanis Morissette because I'm not really sure. But it's something.
All right, you guys. This has been a great show. And I'd like to thank our storytellers tonight, Annabelle Gurwitch and Phil Hendry. Wow, those are huge talents, Hannes.
Big talents to bring together.
I can't tell you how happy I am that we could reuse those stories and bring them out again for the fans
and
of story
in case you don't know, we do have a hologram technology where they do appear in the chair while they're speaking. It's
all right,
amazing.
You guys, we're going to wrap it up right about now. I'd like to thank Sean Merrick here at Sideshow Network for helping us out today. And like I said, on behalf of Annabelle Gurwitch and Phil Hendry, and of course you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Story Worthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.